Welcome to the Essential HR Podcast, where today I sit down with Andrew Blyman, business and franchise attorney with Marks & Klein, where we discuss building a solid foundation, best practices for QSR franchise compliance. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Essential HR Podcast. I'm your host, Brian, sales and marketing professional in the franchise space, and want to welcome you to the show and want to introduce Andrew Blyman. Andrew is a franchise and business attorney with Marks & Klein in the Chicago area, and we are going to talk about franchises today and some of the legal aspects that go into it, and welcome Andrew to the show, and would love for you to tell our audience a little bit about you.
Thank you, Brian. Thanks for having me. I'm a lawyer. I like to think we do a little bit more than just practice law, but we're business lawyers. We work with franchisees primarily who are involved in either looking to get into a franchise, are already in a franchise, and adding more, or you know, anything kind of surrounding that business opportunity. So we concentrate our practice on all business law. We don't do personal injury. We don't do criminal law. We don't do family law. We represent businesses. And a lot of what we do is represent people in franchising. So it is a nuanced area of the law. And you know, there are a lot of general business attorneys, but I think we bring some additional focus to the franchise issues that exist, because you know, a franchise isn't just like any other business that you're going to operate, and there's a lot of rules and regulations, not only you know, maybe state or federally, but just in terms of the contract that you're signing, that is highly restrictive. So that's what we do. So again, thank you so much for having me, and hopefully we can give the folks here a little bit of insights into all this.
Absolutely. I know a lot goes into it, and there are tons of laws to stay up to date with. And maybe to get started, you know, what advice would you maybe give to someone, like an aspiring entrepreneur looking to really get into a specific QSR franchise? And what are some of the critical legal steps that they need to be following, and then should they be paying attention to?
It's a great question, Brian, and there's actually a lot to consider. You know, when you're looking at a business opportunity or a franchise, it's really important to understand what you're getting yourself into. Hold on one second. I have kind of a bad connection. Hold on one second. All right. Maybe that's, I don't know. It's kind of breaking
up here
for a second. Okay.
You sound good.
So we can edit that out a little bit, but there's a lot to understand just in terms of you know, the opportunity, the relationship, and the franchisor. So you know, kind of taking a step back, you know, right now I think I saw or heard a number that I think there's almost like 9,000 franchise concepts in the U.S. Which is actually, you know, a staggering number, because, you know, obviously you can kind of think about ones that you know, there's a lot of ones that you don't know about. And the overwhelming majority of the franchise systems in this country have less than 10 units. So there's a lot of, you know, smaller franchisors out there. So when you're looking and evaluating opportunities, and you're looking at the franchisor, it's important to look at and understand the franchisor's infrastructure, the brand, their access to sorry about that. So the franchisor's infrastructure, you want to start over just so we have what in one, is that easier for you?
Fine. Either way. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll, you can,
you know what? I'll stop recording and then start again. Or do you want to just start your, I can edit all
you can out, just cut. You can just cut. Okay. When you're looking at a franchisor, you know, understanding the franchisor's infrastructure and understanding their track record, understanding who may be there to be able to support the franchisees, you know, a lot of these concepts and systems are new, emerging, and you know, they may not have the resources to really provide the necessary support and training that you might need in order to get into a new opportunity like this. So it's very important to kind of know what it is that you're getting yourself into and evaluate, you know, is the value that the franchisor is bringing enough to support the investment of the initial franchise fees and then the royalty fees for the course of the term that you're going to have to pay? Or is this something that you can maybe do independently or do, you know, without the franchise? So, you know, understanding and doing a really deep dive into, you know, their availability to get create better vendor pricing or to get, you know, have resources, maybe access to capital or professionals like accounting resources, lawyers, insurance professionals, you know, how sophisticated that franchisor may be or may not be may impact kind of the overall viability of the opportunity. So when we're counseling and advising clients who are looking at new opportunities, QSR opportunities, you know, what are they bringing to the table? You know, what is their track record? You know, have stores closed? Do they have a lot of people who have signed development deals that haven't been able to open them yet? You know, are people opening stores in a timely manner, you know, which would suggest that things are going well and that they want to get more units open? Or are they kind of sitting on development opportunities because maybe the first units aren't doing too well? So there's a lot of factors that kind of go into the equation and kind of looking and evaluating them, you know, objectively. And then also cross comparing brands, you know, whether it's, you know, Taco, you know, Bell, Taco, you know, City, Taco City, Taco, you know, whatever you want to put on to the end of Taco, you know, how do these brands compare against one another, particularly the emerging brands? So, you know, if you're interested in doing sandwiches or burgers or tacos or, you know, some type of ethnic cuisine, you know, comparing franchises that may be out there that offer similar types of food may be important, because you may see, oh, they're charging a higher royalty and a higher marketing fee, and they're charging a higher franchise fee, and their, you know, territory consists of this big of a radius, but this other concept's territory consists of a bigger radius. So, I mean, there's some of that comparative analysis that needs to be done when you're evaluating this. So back to kind of the question, you know, when an entrepreneur is looking to open a QSR franchise, it you know, there's a lot of these, I'll call them kind of combo business legal issues that do need to be looked at to evaluate kind of what it is you're getting into. And the reason why I say that they're quasi or combo legal and business issues is that, you know, while franchise agreements generally aren't negotiable, there are items that can be negotiated. And you know, particularly with emerging concepts, there may be more of an opportunity to negotiate some modifications. So it may be modification over territory, or maybe fees, or maybe, you know, certain other provisions of the franchise agreement that, you know, you may be able to negotiate, particularly if it's not competitive versus other brands that you're also looking at. So I think there's some crossover there between the legal and the business issues, and just really, you know, getting into those issues in pretty significant detail is very important, particularly for someone starting out down this road of you know, potentially opening up a new outlet.
Yeah, I think your point too about the, I mean, emerging brands versus, you know, other brands too. I think that's a podcast episode in itself. Just talking about emerging brands, what goes into that. I think that's fascinating. Just how much work is involved in starting one of these or getting one of these started up too, and just how doing your due diligence, making sure that you're getting the right team is critical to your success. now kind of going to your expertise a little bit, how do labor laws and employment regulations then impact the operations of QSR franchises?
Very significantly. And it's even more and more seemingly by the day. You know, obviously there's been a lot in the news on the whole joint employer issue. You know, from a franchisee perspective, I'm a little, I'm not going to say less concerned about that, but that's not as much of an issue, except to the extent that, you know, if those types of joint employer relationships are to be found, you know, it may cause more stress on the franchisee operations in that the franchisor may want to charge more money in fees or exercise additional controls or be more involved in your business than you might otherwise want your franchisor to be. Because as a franchisee, you're really an independent operator. So, you know, I think as franchisees, you know, the joint employer rules also impact and hurt franchisees from the standpoint that they don't want the franchisor up in all their business all the time. And it's almost, you know, causing that to be the case if those types of joint employer relationships are being deemed to be established. So, but aside from that, you know, right now, and again, I mentioned, you know, it seems like more and more every day, there's additional labor laws and employment regulations that are getting piled on. But, you know, obviously minimum wage is a very significant issue in the rising minimum wage. You've got paid sick leave acts in many locations that are now being implemented. I know in Chicago, where I am, you know, that's coming into effect July 1st. Cook County has a similar regulation. There's the state of Illinois with the Paid Sick Leave Act as well, which is adding cost and burden onto businesses. On top of that, you know, there's also an attack right now on non-competes, and there's probably going to be some federal regulation or pronouncement here on maybe a ban on certain non-competes in certain industries. So, you know, as you look at the labor laws and employment regulations, those things need to be factored in, you know, from the minimum wage and paid sick leave aspect. You know, it's obviously additional cost onto the employers here, you know, whether it's the hourly wages or, you know, paying for people to not show up, you know, obviously additional cost with regard to the non-compete issue. You know, obviously it puts at risk, you know, kind of some of what you're doing and the confidentiality of that information, keeping people or, you know, preventing them from going to work at other businesses. The idea of non-competes, at least here in Illinois and some other places, for, you know, QSR workers has kind of been invalidated already. But I'm speaking more probably to, you know, management supervisory personnel. I mean, there may, you know, if non-competes are found to be invalid, you know, there may be risk of, you know, losing some of the best, you know, managers, supervisors, C-suite type people to competitive businesses that can potentially compete with you in your market. So this area of law is evolving. And like I said, every day it seems like there's a new regulation. You know, it's very important as a franchisee to keep apprised of what is going on and understand whether it's, you know, with your payroll provider, with your attorney, with your accountant, you know, to just, you know, being on top of the news and kind of what is going on in your area to understand and know and follow what is going on, because you need to be in compliance. So, you know, aside from just the additional cost, there's the burden of just staying up to date and understanding kind of what is going on. You know, I think that it's very important for franchisees to also be compliant in these areas. You know, you may get some inquiries from your franchisor on these types of issues, and obviously complying with the laws and is a requirement of the franchise agreement. So you don't want to run afoul of the terms of the franchise agreement, potentially put yourself in default or something like that, because you're not, you know, following the rules that or the laws that exist and apply to you. So, you know, that could potentially put you into a situation where you may risk, you know, being able to continue to operate the business if you're defaulted or terminated because you haven't been following the law, like the minimum wage law or other things like that. So there's a lot going on in the area, and it, you know, it is important to stay, you know, on top of those things. And then the other thing I would say too is, and this kind of goes hand in hand with some of what I mentioned before in terms of the franchisor, you know, it also, you know, if you have a sophisticated franchisor, you know, that may also help you as they may, you know, be on top of these things and communicating updates on issues or legal issues, labor and employment issues, things like that, because they have a in-house counsel, they have in-house, you know, resources, whereas maybe with some of the smaller startup emerging brands, they may not have those resources to help you follow along with those types of issues. So, you know, there's a balancing act there too, you know, as you kind of look at these brands and what they have to offer.
Mm-hmm. So obviously it's important to have a strategy in place if you're going to try and maneuver through all these labor laws. And I think you made a good point too about your payroll provider, your attorney, you know, your CPA, just having those people in your corner is huge, I think. So switching gears a little bit, I see this often on LinkedIn, but articles about QSR franchises and then real estate and on the real estate market. Maybe speak a little bit to that from a legal perspective. You know, what does that look like? And if someone's trying to figure out, I'm fascinated about this, how you actually go about picking the right spot. You know, I mean, location. I'm sure it's part of that, but what goes into the legal arm of trying to, you know, pick the right spot for your franchise?
It's a very challenging issue, particularly now. Costs are very, very high. The financing costs are high. The interest rates are high. You know, real estate is a very competitive market right now. And, you know, I think that, you know, the real estate issue is an issue that you know, let me think about the best way to phrase this. So I'll give you a quick war story type example. You know, we ended up working with a client, and they were ready to move forward with an opportunity. They were, you know, guns blazing, super excited, eager. They wanted to move forward. We got on a call. We did a franchise review. That's part of kind of what we do. We were talking about, you know, the issues in the FDD, the franchise agreement. One of the issues we were talking about, obviously, is site selection and you know, finding the site and you know, figuring out where you're going to be because of, to your point, how critical it is. Mm-hmm. So in the course of the conversation, you know, I always say this to all my prospects or all clients who are prospective franchisees is, you know, it's really important to understand the real estate landscape in the territory that you are thinking about dropping your pin in. Or, you know, generally when you sign a franchise agreement, you'll get a territory, and that territory may be a circle, maybe zip codes, maybe a map, you know, with just different borders. And you're agreeing to put a location within a specific area. And I said to the prospect, you know, you really should look at or, you know, get a handle on what the market, the real estate market is in that territory. I know you want to do this brand, you're super excited, you're eager, but, you know, they're telling you this territory is available, and that's all well and good, but are there any viable locations for development within that circle? And you say, well, it's a big, big area. Well, it actually, you know, isn't when you think about kind of, you know, how many, you know, potential retail locations there may be. And, you know, within those retail locations, there's tenants that are already there that may have exclusives that may not, you know, allow you to be in the same center, that, you know, may be undesirable real estate locations for the type of brand you're doing. So I always, you know, while you're doing the due diligence of the franchise, I would always say, you know, you need to do some due diligence on the market, the real estate market as well, because the last thing you want to do is, you know, commit to a circle and commit to a territory, pay your franchise fee, and not have any viable locations to really develop within that market. So on this one example I was giving, it turned out after, you know, we had this call, they went out, they started to do some, you know, independent research, you know, calling some landlords, calling some brokers. And, you know, within this, you know, pretty significant area, it turned out there were like maybe four or five viable sites for what they wanted to do when it all, wow, you know, came to shove. Now, that doesn't mean sites couldn't come down the pike later and open themselves up or whatnot, but your clock starts ticking on development once you sign the franchise agreement. So, you know, and then when looking at those five viable sites, you know, two of the strip centers were run down and, you know, pretty bad, and they really didn't want to be in them. And, you know, two of them, or one of them, you know, super, super expensive and, you know, really out of line with kind of what they were going to be able to do. And it turned out that there were really like two spots they could have gone in within this huge territory. Now, maybe that example is a little bit, unique. I don't know. But the point being that, you know, it's very important to kind of do that due diligence on the real estate, know what you're getting yourself into, know what the opportunities are before you, you know, write a check to say, yeah, I'm moving forward. And it's even more important if you're talking about doing like a development deal, you know, with like, I'm going to develop 10 sites over the next 5 years or 10 sites over the next 10 years. Really understanding kind of the real estate component is critical to, you know, success. And then, you know, once you get into a brand, once you get into, you know, you sign a lease or you're negotiating a lease, you know, exclusivity, option terms, limited personal guarantees, caps on, you know, common area expense charges or increases, you know, obviously rent is a critical issue. You know, and, you know, I mean, those are a lot of the terms that you might, you know, negotiate. There's others, but, you know, if someone's going to want a full and limited personal guarantee in one center and, you know, there's a rolling 1 year guarantee somewhere else, maybe it's better to go with the location where you can negotiate a reduced guarantee. So there's a lot of considerations that go into, you know, site selection, lease negotiation. There's a lot of issues. And it's very competitive right now. I mean, just the market, you know, the rent is still seemingly high, you know, rents are still seemingly high. And, you know, we've been getting more calls of late just with, you know, I think people's, you know, sentiments and are starting to be a little more negative and struggles are starting to, you know, creep in, I think. And, you know, our only, you know, that kind of a common theme or observation with many of these situations that we're having is a lot of the federal money has worn off at this point. They just run out. It's kind of keeping them afloat between ERTC, PPP, EIDL, you know, all these government programs propped some folks up for the last couple of few years. And I think some of that money has now kind of run out. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But I mean, of late, we have gotten more calls with people who are, you know, really facing some more dire circumstances than, you know, several years ago, obviously, or, you know, pre-COVID, certainly. But
oh, sure. No, absolutely. And I think to segue, you hit on it a little bit there, but as far as like in your opinion, you know, what are the most important, as kind of as we wrap up here, legal trends and our developments, you know, in the QSR space that, you know, we should be monitoring, and maybe put your kind of futuristic hat on, you know, what should we be paying attention to here in the next, I mean, we're here in 2024, the next, you know, 4, 5, 6 years, you know, as we approach the end of the decade, you know, what are your thoughts around that?
I think it's a lot of the stuff that I mentioned. I mean, the minimum wage is a critical one. You know, the brand's preparation for combating that, or a brand's preparation for combating that. I mean, unfortunately, I think the reality is in most systems that, you know, if minimum wage is going to continue to go up, alternative technologies are going to be used to replace the workers. You know, I think that, you know, we'll see a lot more app, kiosk, online ordering requirements. I know you've probably seen there's a bunch of these brands that were going to, you know, basically a pickup only type situation where you walk in, you literally don't see anybody, and your food is in a cubby that they tell you the code to open the cubby and you can pull it out. I think we're going to see a lot more advancement on the technologies. I mean, the kiosks and the apps and the computers don't call in sick. They don't harass people. They don't, talk back. They get there on time. I mean, there's just a lot less, it's more consistent than employees. Now, obviously, there's going to be some need in a lot of places for some aspect of customer service to stay. But instead of having three people at registers or four, they may have one. And that one person will help the people order on the kiosks. And a lot of people are way more adept at doing all of that now. And so, you know, I think that there's going to be a big focus on technology. You know, brands are going to commit resources to purchasing or requiring their franchisees to purchase those types of technologies. You know, I think we'll continue to see a consolidation of a lot of these systems. And what I mean by that is, you know, there's going to be more and more multi-unit operators and less like single unit operators, where, you know, you're going to have, whether it's just multi-unit operators, private equity, family office type people buying up a lot of the mom and pop operations and operating them. So, you know, where it used to be, maybe there's 100, there are 50 franchisees operating 100 stores. Now there'll be 3 franchisees operating 100 stores. So we've already seen that here over the last 5, 10, 15 years, where a lot of brands have really consolidated and there's more and more multi-unit operators, but I think we'll continue to see that. And particularly where, you know, in a lot of systems, the franchisees, a lot of them have been around for 15, 20, 25, 30 years in some of these brands. And at some point they're going to need an exit strategy. So I think, you know, that also supports this theory that, you know, there will be more consolidation within the brands. But, you know, we'll see. You know, at minimum wage, though, joint employer, non-competes, all those types of issues, I think, are, you know, top of mind for legal considerations. And, you know, aside from that, not really on the labor and employment side, but, you know, there has been more of a sophistication on the franchisee side. Obviously, franchise agreements at this point have evolved to be, you know, incredibly one-sided for franchisors. You know, with the sophistication level of franchisees increasing, I mean, it's never going to be a balanced relationship, but there may be some softening on some of the terms and provisions of franchise agreements if franchisees kind of say, look, we're just not going to sign some of these agreements anymore because they're too far, you know, in the franchisor's favor. And so there may be some relaxing of some of those types of issues like repurchase rights and termination rights and things like that, that may evolve, but we'll be watching to see if any of that happens. And we'll obviously keep people advised if it is.
Absolutely. No, great information. Andrew, how can someone get a hold of you if they want to learn more about you and your business, what you do and your firm?
So I can be reached by email, phone. You can email me at andrew@marksklein.com, MarksKlein.com. I can always be reached by phone 312-206-5162. 312-206-5162. You can Google me, and our firm website should pop up as well. But happy to speak to anybody. If anybody has any questions, I'm happy to be a resource to anybody. They're not going to get a bill if they call and they ask me a quick question. Always happy to share some knowledge or try to help in any way that I can.
Awesome. Awesome. Andrew, thanks so much for your time. Greatly appreciate all your wisdom and expertise. Thank you. And look forward to spending more time with you down the road.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Essential HR Podcast. Tune in next time where I sit down with Scott Jacobson, CPA from Onward Equity, where we talk about ways to grow your business and step out of your comfort zone.